Hello, this is John Riolo. Welcome to the Insider Podcast Series. My guest today is Dr. Ofer Zur, a colleague and friend who has been with us before. Dr. Zur is a licensed psychologist, instructor, forensic and ethics consultant, and expert witness in private psychotherapy practice. He practices in Sonoma, California. He has been in practice for over 20 years and is director of the Zur Institute, and his website will be located prominently on this podcast. He offers continuing education online and courses for mental health practitioners online and in person. His teachings and writings focus on ethics, critical thinking, boundaries, dual relationships, the creation of managed care free private practices, and a critique of DSM, boundaries, and sundry other topics. His books, some of which have been featured on this podcast before, include Dual Relationships and Psychotherapy, HIPAA Compliance Kit, The Complete Fee-for-Service Private Practice Handbook, and Boundaries in Psychotherapy. We will be discussing an article today he co-authored with his daughter, I'm sure he's a proud father, as a Zur, dealing with internet addiction. So, as a return guest, welcome, Dr. Zur.
Thank you so much for having me, John. It's always a pleasure to be with you, to get critiqued by you, to get challenged by you, and especially on this open field, cutting edge issues that we probably do not know more than we know.
Okay, let's start. And there's so many things in your article. I read it over several times, actually, before this podcast, and I'm not quite sure where to begin. So let me throw it out to you to start. What do you think is some of the most salient issues that our listeners, both professional, layperson alike, may need to understand about the concept of internet addiction, use, misuse, proper use, etc.? Let's take it from there.
First of all, the article we are referring to that I co-author with my daughter is at www.zurinstitute.com/internetaddiction.html. And you can find it on Dr. Riolo's webpage as well. The article is titled On Digital Immigrants and Digital Natives. And in some regard, this is perhaps one of the most potent issues that facing parents and children this day and age. The parents coming to the children's room and yelling, you're wasting your time on a computer. And then we come to we see them spending even more time, and we see them checking their Facebook an email every 2 minutes or every 2 seconds. We feel that they don't do their homework. And when they do their homework, the iPod is on, a little trailer is playing on the computer. They check their MySpace and Facebook profiles, and perhaps a game or two playing. And at the same time, they are doing their homework. To add to all this, at the same time, they have to hear us parents yelling at them about doing all this stuff. So we are at a loss. The kids are in their virtual world, and we parents, as I call it, I adopted the name kind of from another doctor that talk about digital immigrants. So we digital immigrants are at loss of how to deal with the children. This is one issue.
I can stop you there because I think it's a major important point. Predominantly, I think you're absolutely correct, it's a generational issue, but not exclusively. Some of us, older people, past childhood, although some will say that I've gone into my second and third from time to time, are more into the digital world than others at different levels. Some of the things you said about parents checking in on their kids or whatever, I've had members of my family make those same comments about me, although I still can't text very well. My thumbs are not as coordinated as the average 9-year-old. So it's generational. But it's also, I think, your other phrase, I think, is even more apt. It's digital natives and digital people with visas and people who are on the outside altogether, foreigners.
You know, you and I are eager adopters of technology. And the fact that we are doing this podcast and you're going to digitalize it and I'm going to put it on my huge website and you're going to put it on as big of a website means that we are an eager adopters. But nevertheless, you and I are immigrants into the world of digital. My sons, 14 and 18, grew up with that. That means they were already having computers at age 3, even though it was my computer at the time, they were already clicking on that. At age 5 or 6, when they want to learn how to type, they're having a Mavis Beacon to type. It's like you and I moving to England. You and I may have been in England for a long time. We really know the nuances of the British culture. We know how to go to the Irish pubs and to order a beer. We are very comfortable. But you know what? We were not born there.
Good point. I think you really hit on something there. I like that.
So we are eager adopters, unlike many people who are reluctant adopters, or very few who are non-adopters altogether, even though somebody will say it would be very hard to function in this world without any access to the Internet. But the kids, what the difference is that the kids and some people would argue that even their brains, as a result of being natives, may be functioning differently. But let's go to your original question. What are the other hot topics? So the first topic is immigrants versus native, parents versus children, the differences. My son will not talk to me on the phone. He'll text to me 200 times a day. He won't talk on the phone. That's what they do. We'll talk about it later on. The other issues that are very hot and very unresolved are the whole issue of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Is internet and gaming are addictive, or it is just a case of different people have different tolerance to how much people spend in front of the computer? Are we addicted to shopping? Are we addicted to being on a treadmill? Are we addicted to television? So is the addiction idea is overused, or it is difference between people's tolerance to what they do, and some pharmaceutical companies would like to make more money by finding more disorders. We can talk about that. So the whole question, is it addictive or not? There's definitely cases of kids spending 15, 20 hours a day on a computer, which is harmful, no doubt. But there are a lot of harmful things that are not necessarily addictive, and many harmful things that are addictive that may not be mental disorder. So if we have time, we can cover these issues. The third hot issue, and this will be the last one kind of for the big three biggest issues that we are facing, I think, as a culture, and we'll focus today in this podcast, is the issue of online gaming. Online gaming got a very bad name. And we think our kids are alone in front of the computer while they're really hanging out with 40 other kids from 30 different countries and strategically trying to have a raid or strategically trying to acquire something against another group. There is a huge misunderstanding about the educational and communal aspects and developmental aspects of online gaming. So, and there's a similar misunderstanding about what is MySpace and what is Facebook in regard, are they isolated or are they connected while they are on the computer. So this is the three main issues, and you pick and choose which one we are going to focus on today.
Well, let's see if we can at least do some justice to all three. I think we started to talk about the generational issue, and I agree with you. I think the concept in terms of, you know, kids today who at the age of 3 started out on a computer, whether their brains are different than not, I think they see the world very different than even you or I do, who may spend many hours a day at our offices, a good part of which on the computer. I think that's an interesting point.
Beautifully said. Let's kind of even expand on that. How are we different than our kids' generation? that we prefer to talk on the phone and they prefer to text. As I mentioned earlier, my son will respond to my text. He can text while the cell phone in his pocket. He's not supposed to do it during class. Hopefully, he does it very little during class, but I'm sure he does some. He will respond to text. They prefer what we call asynchronistic communication. You and I prefer to pick up the phone or to hang out in Rhode Island or to do this podcast. These kids prefer, like they do, an email. It's one and sequentially responding to the one before, the one prior. So they prefer asynchronistic or sequential communication, unlike our generation that prefer to have synchronistic in real time. They do in MySpace or Facebook. They are all asynchronistic, sequential type of communication. We like manuals. We grew up and we want to change the carburetor in the car, and we have one, lift up the hood, two, release these five bolts, four, yank out this hose, five, replace the carburetor. They don't have manuals. This generation, they are intuitive. The mediums that they are working with are responding to their intuitive way of looking at the world. It's a quick trial and error, click, 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 and they figure it out. This is why we cannot program the VCR, and they can. So the whole relationship to manual versus intuitive way of figuring out. We like to hang out in person. I have lunch with my friend yesterday and breakfast with another friend today, and my wife and I will go on a date tonight. They hang out often in chat rooms. They hang out in social networking. When I'm upset with my son at midnight going on my Facebook or my space, he'll say, "Dad, I'm just hanging out." So they don't go behind the school. They don't sit in the cars, and they do it online, good or bad. We like to use proper English. Needless to say, when they text, they use their own English. And they share a lot. They share. They go on a trip, and they put the pictures online before they come back. Actually, you and I doing it as well, but most of adults don't do that. We gather information on the Internet. They use the Internet to socialize, to play, to watch videos, to create videos, to play with graphics, and to watch shows. We think they waste their lives online. Many aspects of this young generation is actually happening online. We call the Internet as not real life. Guess what? It is real for them. We need to use the term online and offline rather than real life and not real life. We like to have one task at a time, and sometimes we eat and drive, so we multitask. Needless to say, what these kids can do in multitasking, and amazing research, conflicting research about how does the brain adapt to that. We are concerned with kidnapping and assault and robbery, and their concern is more sexual inappropriate, pornography, cyber stalking, identity theft. So they're going to face somewhat different ways of even experiencing danger compared to our generation. This is kind of a quick summary of some of the differences between the generations.
You know, let's take up on that, because I think one of the things I can recall, in fact, we may have even discussed it at different times in other podcasts, or at least in communications that we've had, the idea of online therapy. And many of our colleagues, and I've straddled the fence a little bit, have been ambivalent about it, in part, I think, something because you touched upon. It's asynchronous, or at least the way it's been for the most part. And we were brought up, at least I was trained, to look somebody in the eye, or at least when I was analytic, have them lay down on my couch, and it was simultaneous. And we were, many of our colleagues were, or many of us were taught to think that, well, if it's asynchronous, it's not as good as. Yet, I think what you're saying is that in terms of its application for professionals, there may be problems with online therapy and maybe a whole lot of issues that need to be looked at, but the fact that it's asynchronous, at least for the up-and-coming generation, may not be a big issue at all.
Not only may not be a big issue, it will be the preferable mode of interacting. I just say my son, my young one, 14, loves to talk to me. And when we're in person, in the car, playing basketball, whatever that we do, he loves talking to me. On the phone, he will only text me. He'll be very responsive and very... So the young generation are going to take to e-therapy. What happened is that we have a lot of old people like you and I who are reluctant adopters in our field, and they create all kind of big values about looking straight in the eye and reading body language, and we cannot... you know, and we cannot interfere in crisis. You and I talked about it before. It's silly. Suicide prevention happened online by a hotline for 50 years, and they've been very effective. Some people say more effective than face-to-face. So the new generation, as you beautifully put it out, is more likely to respond to e-therapy, asynchronistic, than the older people, and we have to stop moralizing the face-to-face, and we have to stop talking about the lack of efficacy of e-therapy, because it's not true. We have research that it's effective, and so it's our reluctant and lack being an immigrant that cause us to moralize the differences between e-therapy and face-to-face, and you said it beautifully. On top of it, some people, even on the older generation, just prefer to do it via the phone. They can talk about, without shame, I'm talking to an engineer in L.A., and he can talk about his pornographic use without looking me at the eyes, and he can produce much more information and gain much more insight without feeling as much shame.
In a way, maybe it's like having your patient lie on the couch without looking at you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very similar in this regard.
The other piece you brought up that I want to touch in terms of with the idea of multitasking and what that means for young people today, for adults today, and for maybe for the future. One of the things that I hear fairly regularly is that, you know, how inattentive or the attention span of, you know, adolescents are. And that's seen as a negative thing. In fact, many people associate that as one of the major symptoms with ADD, ADHD, and either they medicate or it's a problem that's got to be addressed in some way. If I understand your article correctly, part of the implications may be, well, you know, that may not be such a big problem for the next generation as people our generation might think, because that may be more the norm than the outlier, and what we might be considering a diagnosis, they're considering an asset. Am I reading that correctly?
You know, you are correct, and I must really be clear that the research is still out about the whole meaning, implication, brain issues, and that come around multitasking. But what we know, that generally most people in our generation can drive and talk on the phone, and right now I sip my coffee and talking to you, and this is multitasking. We can even talk on the phone and drive and eat sometimes. But when it comes to complex tasks, the way we see our kids doing the term papers, as well as watching a movie, as well as perhaps... responding on Facebook, this kind of task, the brain does not multitask. What really the brain does, the brain oscillates. In other words, the brain hops from task to task to task. My sense is that the younger generation has a greater capacity to hop than we do. Their brains hop faster than we do when it comes to complex tasks. Now, the question is it a disruptive two questions that you raised. One, is multitasking interfere with retention of information and comprehension of information? And the jury is out of that. Some research has shown that actually the retention of most important information is intact. Other research says that the retention and comprehension is really being interfered in college classes. We know that several Fortune 500 and other Silicon Valley companies have instituted what they call topless meeting. And in the topless meeting, they refer to gathering where laptops and other mobile devices like BlackBerries and iPhones are all banned. And they do it in order to increase participant focus, attention, and productivity. So we know it irritates people. We know that it may interfere. We don't have the data on that. The other part that kind of refer to that is it's their world again. It's a multitasking is part of the world, and it's not ADHD because they stay focused on all this multitask for hours and hours and hours. On one hand, we yell at our kids, don't spend so much time on Facebook. On the other hand, we call them ADHD. This is kind of crazy. They can spend 20 hours on gaming. Nothing is ADHD about it. They are focused and ferociously sticking with the task. So we don't want to confuse multitasking and ADHD, and because they are very different phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Very, very important point. Now, a couple of pieces I want to hopefully we can get to that is in your article. Certainly I think the issue of the social networks. Again, you mentioned Facebook, MySpace. We're both on it. More and more adults are getting on it. How it's used by young people and maybe how it's used by us immigrants as opposed to the natives.
Most of them are actually adults, unlike what we thought. But we'll say also because we also have a bigger number than the kids. Hmm. So number wise, we are in a majority, but we can say percentage-wise, there are more kids on the social networking. It's really their world to connect. This is how they hang out. This is how they share pictures. My daughter used to, I'm not sure if she's still doing it, she get up in the morning and she shared her dreams with only 5 people. And she had dream support group or dream analysis group online. And she is a fantastic writer, as apparently from her writing this article with me. Definitely the English is hers in the article. And she, with her BA in philosophy, she's a thoughtful girl. And she finds that email can bring at times much more thoughtfulness with a time that allows you to write or rewrite when the people respond specifically to points in the emails. I find sometimes talking to her via the email is much deeper than talking to her as on the phone, which may be easier just to say, I love you and I care for you and I miss you and all this stuff. So what they do online is hanging out, but they also discuss dreams, they discuss moods, they have a mood scales at all time on this network, social networking. They create art. They manipulate photos. They create graphic arts. They do and redo their profile, which is each time is a creative endeavor of some sort. So we think they're wasting their time, but they are learning and socializing and having fun. 3 things that perhaps immigrants need to understand about the natives.
What I think your article is helping me at least conceptualize a little differently. As you know, I've been very concerned over the years about confidentiality online, and I have a number of my articles on the website dealing with that in particular, both for professionals as well as for the average everyday person. And when I would go to Facebook, like even just yesterday, I would notice that a part of me would cringe a little bit. I would see people I would know, people that are my friends or whatever, or friends of them, would say things that to me, you're not going to get me to put in writing anywhere. Torture wouldn't get it out of me quickly, and yet they do it as a matter of course.
I tell my kids, everything you put online, treat it as being posted on the front page of the New York Times. Your employers, your future employers will see it, your college counselors, admission officer will see it, your potential girlfriend or boyfriend will see it. So part of internet literacy that we need to do with the young one and the old one is to realize that once they put something online, there's no place to hide. And I continue to, and this is true about therapists, and this is true about clients, and this is true about our children.
So even with this, and I think the idea of many younger people, the natives, seem to be less concerned about that issue than we might be. And
there's much bigger sense of tolerance to transparency. There's no doubt about it. And nothing wrong with that, as long as they know that what is there is available to their employer, boyfriend, girlfriend, and college counselor. So as long as they know that, but they have much more tolerance that you and I will have to transparency.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I notice I see, you know, pretty regularly. You know, what's on my website or my Facebook page, if anybody goes there, are things that I want to be there and I want people to know about. The things I don't want them to know about, you're not going to find there.
So it's a different world because they have a higher tolerance to be known and to share. And many of them do it consciously and deliberately. But again, this is a native way of looking at the world. They don't have the privacy that our generation, or even more so our parents' generation. And when I just was lecturing in Singapore, and there the problem is even bigger because the issue of privacy in the Far Eastern cultures is very highly rated. And when the kids cross this line and are so transparent, it creates even a bigger rift between the natives and the immigrants.
Fascinating. Now, one of the things I wanted to go back to, we touched on before, was our time was beginning to reach an end for this time, although I have a feeling we may want to come back and do a couple on this, because the more we talk about it, the more issues keep popping into my head that are important to discuss, is the idea of what you call gaming. Now, first, a qualification, had some experience with people who have been involved in gambling, whether you want to call it a gambling addiction or compulsive gambling. The casinos refer to that as gaming. And so there's gambling, gaming, but I think you were talking about gaming in a different sense, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I was talking about online gaming, which can be fantastic tool for learning. You know, we talked yesterday, instead of teaching history about the Roman Empire, go play a game when you are a Roman soldier and you need to march all the way to the Holy Land. And if you don't prepare well, you're going to die and you have a chance to do it again. If you don't cooperate with your fellow soldiers, the whole unit will die and you can try to do it again. Whether you want to run a zoo by playing Zoo Tycoon, or you would like, of course, the biggest game in the world is the World of Warcraft, and you would like to socialize and have fun and strategize some raids with fellow players all over the world. So I'm talking about online gaming.
Gaming. And the video games that, we would be, say, the foreigners or the new immigrants, they would use that phrase,
The video games and the online games will fall into kind of the online gaming kind of category. And there is definitely a lot of use, there is some overuse, and there is abuse. You mentioned gambling. A lot of people trying to compare online to gambling or to alcohol and to try to treat it like that. And, of course, it's when money is involved, it's sometimes people do it just for the money issue, profit, rather than what's a real issue. I think that online, that if there is an addiction or overuse around issues about the internet, online gaming, it will be like more of a food addiction rather than gambling or alcohol, because you can do without alcohol, you can do without gambling, but you cannot do without food. And for the future generations, they probably will not be able to function really successfully in the world without being online. So, and then a lot of people argue, is it a mental disorder or not? This American Psychiatric Association decided not to include it in the 2012 upcoming DSM-5. So perhaps there's still debate, but it's not going to be included in the next DSM. The question, most people find the gaming or even the internet very exciting. They get entangled with that, whether it's days, weeks, or even months, and most people correct. So you use it, you get excited, you overuse it, and then you go back to balance. This is kind of John Grohol a model, and it's a very good one. Other people were looking at the addiction model as something that really escalates from normal use to excessive use to harmful overuse, which may or may not qualify as an addiction, and some people say it's a mental disorder. So there are kids who end up playing 20-plus hours a day, 4, 5, 6, 7 days a week. And this is definitely a harmful way to use the internet and gaming. Is it an addiction or not? I don't think it really matters, because we need to intervene with these players, people who harm themselves that way, especially if they are young ones that we have responsibility for. So we need to intervene. But I'm not sure that the addiction model, definitely the harm, the alcohol type and gambling addiction, I don't think is relevant. If we want to use any addiction, we may need to use more the eating disorder type.
I think you have a point there, because I think it would, for most part, for many people anyway, the alcohol and drug addiction still seems to utilize a disease model and abstinence as the primary clue. And I don't think it's going to happen with internet use.
We need to use what you and I have talked before, the harm control or measured use, whatever we call it, so harm reduction.
A reduction.
And ultimately, it comes to balance. And this is true for anything. So how much time you spend online versus how much time you spend offline? How much time do you spend with your friends versus how much time in solitude? How much time do you spend in nature versus you spend in a city? And as one of my friends many years ago coined, what's the balance between the internet and the inner net?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now,
so
with a couple
of minutes, down to balance.
Yeah. In terms of helping, because a lot of the article is geared towards, well, for many different audiences, but for, you know, parents as well, towards your article has some very interesting, sort of guides and recommendations for parents who might be most concerned about this, as well as for professionals who are advising parents. You want to take a couple of minutes just to cover some of the do's and don'ts and things that might be helpful, at least to keep, to avoid getting into unwinnable, what I call unwinnable battles between parents, kids.
If a therapist reading this article and you don't know much about online gaming, this article will help you help parents understand. What we want to tell parents as a counselors, therapists, psychologists, social workers, don't label the kids. Stop blaming them for wasting their time and wasting their lives, because they don't feel like that. Stop the nagging. Stop the scolding. Stop blaming technology or the friends or the server or whatever it is. What you want to do, if possible, get on the floor and join them. If you have it in you as a parent, ask the child to teach you the game. If you are And when I ask my children to teach me the game, they just made a lot of fun of me because I cannot click so fast and I cannot coordinate my fingers so fast as they do. And it was one big make fun of dad kind of session. But it doesn't matter because we were laughing. That's what really matters. So I asked them to teach me. I failed miserably, but we had a connection. If you don't want to play the game, just watch your children. Before you go to all this judgment about them wasting their life and they're going to fail school and they'll amount to nothing, we tell parents, watch them. Watch them and understand what's the allures of the game, what draws them to the game before you go to any judgment. And then you'll probably find that they are socializing, they have a lot of challenges being presented by the game, and most importantly, they have fun. So,
bring up a couple of points, both for parents and also I think it can't be stressed enough for therapists and counselors as well. When I used to work with, before I retired, when I used to work with children in my practice, I would often have very unsophisticated by today's standards, very simple video games in my laptop. And from time to time, I would just have them, come up to my laptop or bring the laptop down on the floor with them and have them teach me how to play some of these games. And they were quite good.
I bet they were good. So joining the teens, telling parents, stop the berating, stop harassing them, and start observing them or even playing with them. Once you understand the game and understand what the game gives to the children, what do they like even about MySpace, if it's not about the gaming, about just the use of the internet? What about them creating profiles and making movies online? But if you're going back to the games, if you understand what the game serves them, you'll be able to know your child better. Now, it does not, at the end of the day, you need to teach moderation. We tell our kids, are 14 years old, at 10 o'clock you go to bed, and the last hour or half an hour you are reading in bed. So we don't make a big deal that he needs to read for 5 hours, because the new generation are not great readers necessarily. They are more visual than they watch movies. But, it was a few hundred years ago, people were not reading either. They were just listening to each other's stories. Mm-hmm. So we need to stop moralizing what feels comfortable for us, whether it's face-to-face therapy or even reading. So we need to create some balance between visual stimulation, as in movies, and trailers and stuff like that, and news that are very short clips, and reading, but not to moralize the super importance of reading to a generation that's shifting away from reading into much more learning via movies, if we kind of summarize it this way. So they are not auditory necessarily, and they are not word-related. They are kind of more imagery-related. This is be the next generation. This is how humanity is evolving right now.
A related point, and I think your article touches upon it too, is that many parents internet providers and TV makers, they talk about these parental controls. Now, I'm not going to say to parents they're no good at all. They can be very helpful. But I think it's a false sense of security to think that any reasonably intelligent 10-year-old cannot, within a short period of time, figure out how to circumvent the most sophisticated of these parental controls.
That's a fantastic point. I mean, we gave our now he's 17 and a half, so we gave him parental control when he was 10, and it lasted for good 3 years. I think he told me that age 14 he learned how to work around it. And now he's teaching his 14-year-old brother how to go around it. But what we do, so it's good for young children, and I think it's very important to have it. Some of the games have built-in parental control for violent as well as for language and of course, pornographic and violent images. So So the parental control can be very helpful for young kids not to just wander the internet and stumble into sections that can be developmentally very unhealthy for them to be exposed to, violence and pornography primarily. However, at the end of the day, it's my conversation with my boys and my girls that will prepare them to create internal control. So you're absolutely right. For the young ones, it's very good and very helpful. 14, 15 years old can go around most of the parental control and most of the limits that we put for them in this regard. But at this point, good conversation should replace the external control. We still keep some of the games have very good internal parental control that they have, and it's not that easy for the kids to go around them when it comes from the gaming company themselves. But that does not stop them from finding all other places as part of the internet.
So I think it's a good beginning, you know, first step. But then again, it's the self-discipline. If that's not there, these external controls won't last very long and won't be helpful for very long.
And ultimately, they're going to college, or they're going to the big world, or leaving the house, or go to work, to the workforce. And we need to teach them this internal control rather than parental control. But we need to have be in relationship with them. And this is when the scolding and the nagging doesn't help, because once we scold them all the time and nag them all the time, they don't want to be with us, and even it increases their internet and gaming use because they don't want to get out of the rooms. It's not fun.
No,
so we are part of the problem rather than part of the solution if parents are not interacting with the kids in an intelligent and developmentally appropriate ways.
Dr. Zur, I could see I'm going to have you come back again to talk about this very subject, because I think we only touched the surface, really. Even though it was a relatively concise article, it's just springing up so many different issues. I certainly hope everybody would read the article, but in the minute or so we have left, I'd like to give you, all my guests, the last word. What final bit of information do you want? You think our listeners will get, hopefully include both professionals and non-professional alike, can walk away with from this podcast?
We are in a junction in the evolution of humankind that technology kind of introduced us to, and we need to bring more awe. We need to bring more to dare not to know where we are going versus just to react from fear or moralize what is familiar to us as superior. So be open, explore, dare not to know, and most important, keep the connection between people and the play and people who don't play, parents and children. And the technology can be used in order to enhance this connection and then create balance. Balance between online and offline, and between physical and non-physical, between virtual and non-virtual, and as I said before, between the internet and the internet.
I think that's a good place to close. Balance is certainly something we all really need to strive for. I want to thank you again, and thanks to your daughter for participating in this article. I'm sure you must be a very proud father to have her, you know, working with you and bringing her expertise, which I'm sure augmented yours in coming up with something that I would really encourage all our readers to take to take a good look at. And that's going to be.
I'll give the URL again quickly. How's that?
Good enough.
www.zurinstitute.com/internetaddiction.html.
Okay, and that should be prominent on the podcast, blurb itself on our website. So either way, people can get to it. Again, Dr. Zur, thank you again. And I think you're going to be back again to pick up part two of this, because I think this is really, really cutting edge and important stuff.
Thank you so much, John.
John Riolo, the Insider.